Did you guys get a lot of snow?
No, I didn't get any snow.
It snowed yesterday, and now it's gorgeous. What is going on?
I know. Well, what temperature?
I think it's El Nino. It's like 55 degrees, probably.
No, it's not gorgeous.
It's nice, though.
Well, it's cold.
Yeah.
I just completely took your world apart.
I don't know.
You went from thinking it was a nice day to looking outside and thinking, oh, fuck this day.
It's bright, and, though. That earns several degrees.
It is bright.
And, Russ, I've been thinking about it a lot lately, and the things that make you happy aren't really that great. I'm just saying, like, the things that you really love in this world are actually pretty shitty.
Yeah, I'm beginning to notice that, too.
The smell of your mother's perfume that you remember so fondly is she and your father got ready for a night out. It didn't smell that good.
Yeah.
No.
That sense memory you have is actually wrong. You're thinking of gasoline. You were thinking of gasoline.
The smell of freshly baked cookies?
Mm-hmm.
Nah, not very impressive.
More like freshly baked dookies is more like it.
Why don't people call them dookies more?
We could bring that back.
That's a weight loss tip for you. If you call cookies dookies, you'll want to eat them less.
I would hope if you call cookies dookies, I would hope that you would want to eat them never again, at least in public.
My name is Justin McElroy, and I know the best game of the week.
My name is Griffin. I got caught in a stretch. I'm Griffin. I play games.
My name is Chris Plant, and I live in New York City.
My name is Ross Frostick, and I know the best game of the week.
It's the besties, where we talk about the latest and greatest and hottest and sexiest games. And we put them together, and we make a little pie. Like a little pie and out of games. And then to this week on the besties, we got Gears of War.
Rashomon.
Gears of War, back again. We got...
You forgot
you
what
don't even remember.
Luigi Mansion and Walking Dead. Games are here, and they're hot and ready to go.
So to be digested.
Sexy-ass games.
These are some games that people played. Let's get into the boring one. Gears of War Judgment.
Yeah, I've got a lot of thoughts on this game, but I wanted to start it out reminding us all that Chris Plant had a snobby art school college experience.
Mm-hmm.
So the only way that I was able to convey to him what Gears of War Judgment was about was by calling it basically Rashomon.
It's true, because you see, you play as Baird, but truly you're Tajumaru, the rapist of
Guys,
the delicate.
I'm so fucking dumb. Can you fucking tell me what you're talking
Tajumaru?
About?
Tajumaru?
Please.
The star of Rashomon?
Okay, I heard the words that you said, but I have no association.
Okay, so basically, Rashomon is a very famous film and story.
Can you talk more about Gears, than the book?
No, you gotta know what this is, because it'll explain Gears in a much better way than Gears
Otherwise,
does.
He can't justify his college education and all the money he spent.
I'm a visual learner, though, not an auditory one.
Do you ever see that movie where, like, John Travolta is in the military, and then, like, they tell the story, like, three
Stripes.
Different ways?
Stripes.
It's not.
Old Dogs.
Sure. Yeah, I think it is Old Dogs.
Or sorry, Wild Hogs. Oh, I'm sorry. No, it's Cold Logs.
Cowboy, Space Cowboys.
Mm-hmm.
So in this game, can you feel the hand of writer Tom Bissell?
Oh gosh. Oh, let me actually before we start talking about Tom.
This is a legitimate question.
No, okay, but I'm gonna before we start talking about him in particular, I do want to give everyone the rundown of the story. So you're commanding the role of Baird to start off the game. And the overarching plot, which has a lot of deep ins and outs and a lot of subtext, is basically there's a giant spider and you need a big missile to blow him up. And then you get the missile and then you blow him up.
You know what I like about Baird is that he looks like a beefed up version of Seth Green in Can't Hardly Wait.
Because the goggles.
I always thought he looked like Sid from Final Fantasy VII. And I like
because of the goggles.
That's the same. Well, and the spiky blonde hair. And just the general attitude. I like to pretend it's the same character. And then I'll write I'll like write some fiction about that, and then I'll put it on the internet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe you've read some of my works?
No.
Most of them are just like Baird slash Sid, and but then they like they fuck.
Something to do with Sid's spear.
Mm-hmm. Then I have like Sid slash Sonic. Like Sid's usually in it. Sonic is also usually in it. I got a lot of Sid slash Sonic.
Yeah.
It's hard to
Is that the one where they ate each other's chili dogs?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in a manner of speaking.
Does Sonic like take it in his tails?
Oh, get out of town.
Come on.
Get out of town. We're over here talking about real life.
I thought we were talking about Gears of War Judgment.
So how is the game?
So I actually feel a little bit torn about it because so the campaign, the story is a fucking joke, frankly. Like it's you know, I never thought the Gears stories were all that good, and this one reaches new levels of absurdity and lameness. It's just like as straightforward a story as you could possibly imagine. But the gameplay that they added is essentially they added this whole scoring system where you're constantly being rated based on your performance as you play through the campaign. And so you see these scores sort of like you're increasing your star meter, essentially. And you can increase that faster by adding variables to each little section. So, for example, they're called declassified missions. And if you take a declassified missions for a given section, it might cause fog to roll in and then you can't see very far around you. Or it might cause more enemies to show up that explode or so on and so forth. So they add a bunch of new variables to each of the missions that are optional, but generally, you know, make you play in a kind of interesting way. What I thought was missing was one of the things that I think Gears does very well is like these insanely grand scenes where like you're on an airship and other airships are grappling onto your airship and they're sliding down. And like the stuff that we saw in Tomb Raider, essentially, those crazy set pieces are like a mainstay of Gears. This Gears game has 0.0 of those set pieces.
Really?
It's like every single...
That's like all that Gears 3 was.
I know. Every single level is like very standard cover, you know, practically like square environments. Like it's super, super straightforward, which feels like a step in the wrong direction. And honestly, like a lot of this feels like, oh, we only had a year to make this game. Let's make a relatively simple one. I don't know how long it took them to make this game, but you compare this game to like Bulletstorm, which People Can Fly worked on before this, and that game I think is tremendous and super original and like really set itself apart, whereas this game feels, essentially this feels like Halo ODST, which
a lot of people liked.
Really?
Lots of people liked ODST.
Yeah, okay. ODST is actually my favorite.
You guys,
you are out of your mind.
It's got that jazz music.
Yeah. I can play jazz music. I can have a friend of mine come over and toot on a sax while I play Halo 4.
Yeah, but
toot.
Suffice it to say, I actually really enjoy Tom Bissell's writing, but I didn't really get any of it in this game. Like nothing stood out to me as like good
writing. I don't know if you've been following his kind of it's been a humbling PR tour. I feel like for him. Even his most recent interview for the New York Times was just admitting that when he wrote Extra Lives, that book that came out a few years ago, that he was of the opinion that a good writer could just show up at a video game studio and turn a game around and make it interesting. And now he recognizes that that's not true.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be curious to know like how late into the process he was brought in and whether he had any control of like story elements.
He had considerably more control than a writer is normally afforded with a video game.
But essentially, like, if he wanted
to... It wasn't just him. There was,
yeah,
there was
another
writer.
Person.
I think the writing is fine. I don't think it, like...
When you say writing, let's make it clear. Are you talking about dialogue, or are you talking about...
I'm talking about dialogue and clarity, which... Those are, like, the low bars which I measure video games writing on. And I think it's... I can track what is happening in the story, which sets it above... Most.
But if what is happening in the story is essentially there's a missile and they need it to blow up a giant spider, I don't think that's too hard to convey.
But they chose to make it simple is still, I appreciate that more than the latter, which is, this is actually about Eastern philosophy, and if you read the three comic books that came out beforehand, you know that he's actually your sister, and
yeah,
whatever that
we should
is.
Mention the
it is just when we joke about Rashomon, the idea is that it's a military tribunal that's happening while the war is still raging, and you get four versions of sort of the same story, and there's a lot of interesting playing on the idea of how when people tell stories, they're not always necessarily true or just precise, and that's where that classified, or is it declassified? Is that what it's called? That what's interesting about that idea is that the story itself is slightly changing when you choose those missions. It's like, oh, I remembered actually there were this type of enemies there. I had forgotten that. Or actually there was a Hammer of Dawn strike and we had to get out of there in 2 minutes. And what's really good about those that doesn't exist in the Gears games until now is they actually give stakes for every single scene. Instead of being like, well, here's another hallway, just keep moving forward, usually that tiny little bit of dialogue is like, here's why you should keep moving.
And not only that, it gives you, because of the scoring mechanic, it gives you a reason to care about all of the things that you're doing at any given moment. It's not just like if there's only one guy left in previous Gears games, you would like just fuck around and not even worry about it. But here you're like, oh, I need to get another headshot to complete this mission. And it sort of adds an extra layer of like interest and strategy to the combat. So I like that. Like, I thought that was a really smart idea.
Do you guys feel like, and this could just be the circles that I dwell in, but do you feel like there is a resounding sense of apathy for this game? Like,
yes.
That it is not getting people fired up whatsoever.
Yeah, I think everyone realizes what this game is, which is to say, Microsoft realized how long it would be until the next Gears game came out after 3, and they're like, no, that will not do. How can we get one out in a year and a half? And
yeah. I'm careful to speculate like that. I also don't know if there's apathy. I'd really wait to see what the sales are, because I didn't think it was that popular, and its sales were, I mean, insane.
Out of
I would just say apathy in comparison to an actual sequel-worthy Gears release.
I think the
Gears
bigger
release.
Thing is the type of people who are very jazzed about video games right now have a number of other things to be much more excited about, which is a Tomb Raider reboot, BioShock Infinite, and the absolute gobs of indie games that have been coming out over the past 2 months. So I feel like there just hasn't been a lot of room for people to get excited about something that is...
I just... When I finished Gears 3, which was a fucking long campaign,
yeah,
like, I just didn't have any more interest. I could see them maybe releasing something like this between 2 and 3, or between 1 and 2, but after 3 and its conclusion, as half-baked as it was, like, it's not just narrative, it's just, I shot fucking a billion locusts already. Like, I have done that so many times in every conceivable way. Like, the scoring stuff sounds cool, but that just sounds like, I don't know, that just sounds like a mode on a game I've already played.
It's essentially the same feeling that I had with regards to the Mass Effect 3 DLC.
I try again, not to set a double standard when it comes to Gears, because I play Call of Duty every year, and of course I only enjoy it for about a month before, you know, fucking everybody is, like, cyborgs at it. But I'm not saying there's any more variation there than there is in Gears. I don't know.
I guess I guess I'm frustrated because these guys just made what I thought was one of the most inventive and like subversively interesting first person shooters.
Yep.
In Bulletstorm, and a lot of people never got past the outer layer of Bulletstorm, which was just that sort of like
the marketing.
The marketing. Right.
The which same is bro dude explosion.
When the game itself was actually kind of I don't know, not a satire of that. That's giving it too much credit, but
it was definitely subversive though.
It was definitely a
subversive game, and it was interesting, and it was like, and then for them to make, I mean, it's just, I cannot think of anything less interesting to use this guy's talents on.
Yeah.
Like, I cannot think of anything less inspiring than, listen, we got a brand. We don't want to do another Marcus Fenix game. Let's get, like, really out there and find the other white dude in this team and just really blow it out. And it's like, ugh. With the... I know people like Gears, cool, but like something in, I mean, I was done with Gears halfway through Gears 3. I didn't finish Gears 3. I thought it was a snooze and a half. So obviously I am biased in whether or not I think Gears is a good application of the talents of these guys who just made this game I really like. But I just, it's so, I don't know, it bums me so hard that, that this is what they're working on.
Yeah.
To dig into the writing really quick, comparing those two, I don't know who wrote Bulletstorm, and maybe they were
involved. Remender. So, not, I forget his, he wasn't involved, he's a comic book game. Writer.
But that writing, it was so trashy, but there were moments of, like, just brilliance. Like, and just, it was actually funny a lot of the time, which is unusual. It was a little offensive, but there's a moment towards the end of the game where, I don't know if you remember this, but there's a bomb that you're trying to prevent from detonating, and you, like, stop it and then go on to fight some boss, and then you just wind up in the exact same room with the exact same bomb. And there's a self-aware moment where they're like, oh, crap, we just have to do this again. Like, and it was such a slam on itself in video games. I don't know. I just loved that.
Let's move on. I'm even bored with the combo.
Let's talk about something really happy, like Walking Dead.
I love that show. Oh, so you mean the Telltale game. I love
This is the awesome Telltale game, right?
I played Walking Dead. It's how great, is Clementine? Great. She is better than ever.
Awesome.
I think Walking Dead is great. Walking Dead is a great game. Why are we bringing it up?
The only way this Survival Instinct game would be better is if the first thing you do was shoot Clementine.
Survival Instinct? No, that's a bad game.
Let's make it clear that this is our halftime, because I don't want people saying, I thought you were only going to talk about the best games.
This is not the best game.
This is not. It is.
This is what I did yesterday at 8:30 a.m. I drove to Walmart, and I bought Survival Instinct. It was $50. And so
10 bucks off, that's not bad.
10 bucks off. So it was 40 on Amazon. Get it. This is a gross cat. Have you ever played Walking Dead and thought, this is pretty good, but I wish instead of one of the few interesting minority characters in any video game ever, I wish I was a neo-Nazi, because that is the experience the Walking Dead Survival Instinct delivers to you. It is a first-person shooter, I guess, not really a shooter, where you are Daryl trying to rescue Merle, your brother, Merle Dixon.
Man, those fucking parents couldn't
do anything. Couldn't pick
is Daryl the gentleman with the crossbow?
Yeah.
Yes, Daryl's the one with the crossbow.
Were their parents like wild boars, and it's just the noises that they make?
So I wrote a whole review. I'm sure you guys have read it at this point. So why don't you, instead of me just like going on and on about this game, what questions do you have for me?
How is the crossbow gameplay?
Okay, so the crossbow is introduced about 2/3 into the game. You get the crossbow, and no bullshit, I found 8 arrows.
Well, you can just keep taking them out of the zombie's head, right?
You can, and that's actually an effective, like, that's what you kind of have to do. But like, you're not going to always hit a zombie, and sometimes you're going to fly over you're going to have to run, because sometimes you're just getting swarmed with zombies. Speaking of which, when you get swarmed with zombies, they grab you, and then you hover your cursor over their head and pull right trigger, and it instantly kills them. But then you just get grabbed by the very next zombie. So you just get passed from zombie to zombie, and it's actually the most effective way to kill a crowd of zombies. So the secret of this game is like, oh my god, I'm getting chased by zombies. Round them up into a big herd of zombies and then stand in the middle and just like, let it wash over you.
It's like you're at a wedding and you're doing like a dance circle.
Yes, exactly. They're like, go, Justin, go, while you're stabbing them in the head. So that stinks. The crossbow is actually kind of – I kind of like the mechanic of – it's kind of a neat mechanic of like, I'm going to kill this guy and this guy and this guy, but I have to remember like what I did with my ammo. Like I have to go back and retrieve all of it. That's kind of interesting. The problem with the combat part, there's lots of problems. The problem with the combat part is that there are three levels of like weapon damage, of melee weapon damage, right? Light, medium, and heavy. And the only way to kill someone with a firearm is to put the reticle on their head and then shoot. So you do that with that's what you do with the crossbow or the shotgun or the rifle or the pistol. I mean, it's like, it's all the same. That's what you do. That is the thing that you do.
But
you,
this is a first person shooter, right? Like, the way you're describing it is almost like the shitty aiming in the Walking Dead Telltale game. But
no, I mean, the aiming is not the problem. It's the fact that, so that if you use a firearm, let's say I have like a semi-automatic rifle, right? Let's say I have a bolt action rifle. I point it at a zombie's head.
Yeah.
Then I fire it and hopefully we'll hit the zombie. Firearms work from an unpredictable distance, so they work from different distances, so you'd never know sort of how
that's,
far it's going to be.
That's true to life, though.
Of course it is. But like once you do it, you in theory pull a horde of zombies.
Oh.
So, which once you're in that situation, no weapon is really effective other than letting yourself get grabbed by a crowd. Problem with it is the melee weapons have a much bigger reticle. And all you have to do is get it near the head of the zombie and then pull the right trigger. So that takes two hits with a lead pipe, which you find about second level or so. And that takes one hit with a fire axe, which I found about halfway through. So basically, it was just a fire axe simulator where it was a first person fire axer, where I just went from dude to dude, chopping their head off, like,
guns,
very methodically.
Guns also attract zombies, right? So like there's double... There's double.
Yeah, no. There's double
incentive.
There's double, and there's not a lot of ammo. And if you are behind a zombie, then you can do a stealth kill on them. So a lot of times the best play for a single zombie that has spotted you is to wait till they get close, shove them, then run around behind them and pull off the stealth move to execute them. There's the interesting, like, the thing that's frustrating about it is that it's just clearly underfunded and rushed and not something that they put that not terminal reality. I'm sure they could have done better with more resources. Let me give you an example of an interesting idea. The game is about a journey south. So you stop at, major cities or whatever along the way. And usually it's to get a new car because yours is busted up or to pick someone up or to get supplies or whatever. So, you go south, there's actually branching paths, so on your way down you can choose one way or the other. It's all going the same direction, but if you replay, you can do a different level. And there's a gas meter for your car that you're driving, and you can actually find gas in the levels. So if you drive on backwoods, you use more gas, but there's a higher chance that you'll stop to scavenge. And what that means is you'll randomly stop, you'll end up in this small zombie-infested area, and you can run around and grab all the supplies that you can find. That's what scavenging is.
Okay.
If you run... you
can
also
you define scavenge
for No. It's important that you understand this, okay? So you can also take highways. Highways use less gas, but there's less chance that you'll stop to scavenge and more chance that that your car will break down.
Yeah.
If your car breaks down, you stop in a small area that's full of zombies and littered with supplies. You grab as many supplies as you can and also make sure you grab the part for your broken down car. If you run out of gas, you stop in a small area full of zombies. You grab as many supplies as you can and you also make sure you get gas.
So these are either way, it's all supermarket sweep, like no matter.
Yeah. And they're often the same maps. So like, if you run out of gas, you stop and get more supplies. If you take the highways instead of the back roads, then you won't get to scavenge, but your car breaks down, which is literally the exact same thing. The only difference is you have to find the one part you need, which your compass points you directly to, and then return to your car. With scavenging, you can return to your car at any time. That's it. It's okay. Practically all the same thing. And even this you also get... you can also rescue survivors in the middle of the levels, and they are they'll follow along with you, and at the beginning of the following level, after you save them, you can send them out at the beginning of the level to find you gas or food or ammo. We've already discussed why ammo and gas are useless, so I would send them to food, which you need to replenish your health. It's actually just sports drinks and MREs. That's all the Dixon boys get into. So you send them to go find you more sports drinks and MREs.
That sounds accurate, though. That sounds...
It is
accurate.
Are
we talking Monster? Are we talking... You can... What are we talking about?
No, it's just like lime Gatorade. Oh. So you can send them out. You can actually arm them with a weapon, and then you see a percentage chance that they'll come back alive. If they come back alive, their energy will be low, and the way you fill it is...
Gatorade
and MREs. So basically, thanks for this shit you just found. I guess it would be great if you want to just eat that and live longer.
Yeah, but do they level up?
No, nothing like that.
No.
And if they die, your weapon's gone forever. So, like, but they have different characteristics. Like, some are riskier, and you can send a whole party of people to do something, and that actually lowers the danger.
Will one of them go home and accidentally start a prostitution ring in his parents' house?
No.
What?
I'd imagine the riskiest person would do that.
Oh, God. No, none of that happened. So, like,
and then fuck on a train.
So it's got those interesting ideas. It's just like I said, that it's like I said in the review, there are mechanics, but there's no systems. Like, nothing works together. Like, nothing's, I don't know.
Sounds
awful.
It
also has kind of an interesting thing where if you beat the game with certain qualifiers, like sometimes it's having one survivor still alive or a certain survivor, then you can get different unlocks, like infinite ammo or move faster or whatever for your next playthrough. So when you want to dip back in.
Does it act how much of like a story supplement to the TV show is it? Is it, because it, like, I remember playing Lost Viadomus, which was largely a giant turd. But then at the end of it, you're like, there's a few lost secrets in here that I'll be able to talk to my friends about because of the secrets. Nothing like that in Walking Dead?
I can't tell you the ending.
Okay.
But if I did...
Why can't you tell us the ending?
Okay. Give me 1 minute to spoil the ending for you if you're listening right now. It is not a very good ending. So he hears about evacuation choppers. Daryl does. Merle has been MIA except for 2 levels. And he is not in those levels. For the first one, he has a fever, and for the second one, he's on a roof. Merle has been a completely AFK. There's 2 evacuation choppers, and they're taking off, right? And they're swarmed with zombies, and Merle pulls up to where the evacuation chopper is in like a giant Humvee with a mounted assault rifle on the top, and you shoot 1,000 zombies, and Daryl's like, thank you, Merle, you saved me. And Daryl hops on this helicopter to be evacuated, and Merle pulls him off the helicopter and says, I don't know, it looked like the pilot was turning, so I'm looking out for you. And then they both get in the car and drive away. That's like
the last episode of House. Pretty much the same thing.
It's really not that far off. That's the end of the game. You don't learn. There's no characterization. There are some very sparse in-game conversations with people. And really, like, the least interesting thing about it from a character perspective is that The Walking Dead for these two characters, Daryl specifically, has really been about how he changed from a piece of shit into someone more caring. So this is a whole game where, by definition, he can't evolve. So he's just kind of a piece of shit. And Merle's also a piece of shit. And enjoy your game, I guess.
Yeah. So it's just Redneck Rampage, basically.
If only it were, Griffin. If only it were.
Well, that was disheartening.
Yeah.
It's shitty and desperate.
Let's talk about a better game.
Let's talk about Ghosts.
Let's talk about Spectres. Warren Spector, what's he up to? But no, that's a good joke. But no, let's talk about Luigi's Mansion Dark Moon. So, who else has played it?
I haven't played it, but I have a lot of questions about it.
Okay, well, let me set it up first. We'll go sort of pros and cons, because I think that's the best way to talk about it. Mechanically, like the controls, they've added a lot of stuff. They haven't even added a lot of stuff. They've added a few things that have completely turned it around. Like, in the first game, you... did you have to shine your flashlight on the ghost before you sucked them up?
I never played the first game.
Okay, so... Okay, well, then maybe God... Maybe I need to go back even further. So, in the first game, you had to... You were told that you won this mansion in a contest that you didn't enter. You went to it.
Wait, I was told this or Luigi was told this?
Luigi was. Okay. You go to it and shit gets crazy because there's ghosts up in it.
Yep.
And there were several like types of ghosts. The basic gameplay was there were these boss ghosts that were the denizens of the mansion who had more like human characteristics. Like you would go into a nursery and there would be a baby ghost and you had to figure out what you needed to do to make that baby ghost catchable. Like maybe you had to pick up one of his toys and no, God, it's already a ghost.
Oh, right.
You can't kill it again. So, like, you had to pick up one of its toys and hit the baby ghost with it, and then you could enter into the fight. Or, like, there's a ghost that is obsessed with itself in the mirror, and you, like, open a window, so, like, a gust of wind starts blowing her hair around, she gets up to close the window, and then she's like, vulnerable to be vacuumed.
Wind
like
affects one... ghosts?
Yeah, it's, you know, let's, can we...
Okay, I'm
we
sorry.
We can talk about that all day.
Getting stuck in the nitty-gritty.
So there was that. There were booze that were hidden all around.
What, like
around.
Whiskey and vodka?
Oh, God. Are you?
I'm sorry.
Do you mean, like, just the sound? Like if you open a door, you find...
Well, no, he means boo the ghost.
The ghost.
Oh, boo-hoo.
The Mario ghost.
Oh, wow. there were those hidden all over that you had to find, which you had, like, a little radar thing on your Game Boy Color, which was your radar in the game. Uh-huh. And then there were just sort of general monster ghosts that would just sort of attack you in the hallway that you had to suck up that didn't involve, like, much, much puzzling. Mm. And so in Luigi's Mansion Dark Moon, there is a much, 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 much bigger emphasis on that last kind of ghost. It's just, like, the monster ghost that jumps up and you have to be quick on the trigger to vacuum it, mm-hmm. Which works... Because the instead of just, like, aiming and vacuuming and then pulling away from the ghost to kill it, you now have, like, a few other things you have to do. Like, you have a strobe light on your flashlight that you carry around. You have to, like, flash the ghost to stun it, and then you can vacuum it down. Or you can charge it and stun, like, a whole room full of ghosts if you aim well, and then vacuum them all down. Yeah. Basically...
Is Mario in this game?
I'm not going to tell you that. This is
that's
major
a colossal spoiler. Griffin, I think you should lay out the storyline, though, because I think people are really curious why he's back in the mansion.
Well, that's the thing. There is, like, almost no setup for it. There's a dark moon that keeps all the ghosts, like, docile.
It's not a literal moon.
It's moon-shaped.
Yeah. But it's not,
casts,
like, the moon.
It casts some light, but it's not the moon. King Boo comes, breaks that shit, and then you have to go find all the pieces of it. And Luigi, like, there's no, like, I want a mansion. Like, the professor from the first game is just like, hey, get the fuck back here. There's ghosts again.
Yeah.
And then you go, and then you do that. Like, if I were to summarize what it is, like, what it means as a sequel, it, like, the action-adventure blend of the first game, I feel like it leaned a little heavier on the adventure and the puzzling and sort of the cerebral figuring out how to catch the ghosts. In this one, it's just... more on the action side, and there's still puzzles. There's still, like, some of the boss fights are really clever, but mostly it's about they will throw five ghosts at you and you have to catch them without dying. Like, I don't think I ever died in the first game, in this one several times. Like, there's a pretty big difficulty spike.
How Canadian does it feel?
It doesn't. There's not an overabundance of Canadian.
I would say of all of the Mario characters, Luigi's probably the most Canadian.
Sure
Seems like a fair.
I don't want to undersell this point because, like, the first game was really clunky, like the controls were, and in this one, like, that combination of, you know, having to flash the thing and then vacuum it down, and while you're doing that and while you're pulling them in, like, avoiding the other three ghosts in the room because there almost always are, it works, and, like, it feels great. And a lot of that was engineered for the game's multiplayer component, which is pretty fun. Like, it's basically the same experience as the core game. It's, you know, you're walking around a bunch of rooms. There's a, you know, often a lot of ghosts that you have to take down with the help of your friends. And like, it works. And maybe it would not have worked if it was sort of more that cerebral experience of the first game.
Yeah. Well, the multiplayer is probably what I spend the most time with. Mm-hmm. And I liked it. It almost had that space team, some like space teamy feel to it, just because there was a lot of like shouting, like, "Oh my god, I'm in this room. I'm stuck in a rug."
So while you're talking about that, there is online multiplayer and local multiplayer, and also the local multiplayer has download play. So if you're the only one with the cartridge, you can share it with other people, which I actually tried and it works really well.
Yeah.
The online multiplayer has no voice chat. As far as I can tell, unless I was missing the voice chat button, which I'm almost certain I did not, and it basically makes it impossible. You have 4 commands that you can press that makes Luigi shout like "Hey" or "Help," and those are like
it
those
needs
are
like
not
a "Come the fuck over here" like.
That's
voice
what
command.
I think I wrote that in my first review draft. Was I would happily exchange the "Hey" button for "Hey, you fucking idiot. I'm over here." There's a mode called Rush Mode. So there's a Hunter Mode, which is basically like the core game. Like, you have to vacuum all the ghosts on that floor and then move on. And then there's the occasional boss and you have to work together. Then there's a mode called Rush Mode where you have 30 seconds to run around an entire floor of this mansion looking for the exit. And you can find, if you kill all the ghosts in a room, you get a 10-second expansion. So basically, all 4 players need to run in opposite directions, find the exit, like while they're running, still, you know, vacuuming up ghosts so they can extend the time, and then everybody has to get to the exit before time runs out. I played this maybe 4 or 5 times, never made it past the first floor.
No,
and it's always because 3
difficult.
People make... Right, but you played it in the same room with people.
Yeah, and even then it was difficult?
Yeah, well, you could grab somebody by the hair and say, "Fucking, look where I am. Yeah. Look where I am." We had 3
Brian,
people all
so
standing
really
on the exit.
Grab by the hair.
3 people all standing on the exit. All 3 of us shouting, "Hey, hey, help." And like the guy just like fucking didn't get it. Like waited in the next room until time ran out. It was the most frustrating thing ever. Also, online multi doesn't have persistent lobbies. So once a game ends, you have to go find a game again.
Dude, it's like, kind of fun when you're playing with when the game's not released yet.
It's also more fun trails. When the round you just played lasted 30 goddamn seconds. but all things considered, like, the multi didn't feel as much like a unnecessary appendage as I thought, and I can see how the game was sort of tailored to allow it, and like it what that sacrifice was not completely unjustified.
I would say that there's basically no reason to play online, but for local multiplayer it's quite good.
Well, some of them, like the Hunter mode, works fine online. Like sometimes
it's like a lot of the fun of it is like coordinating with people, and you really can't coordinate online.
One of the other things that has made that, like, you can tell they tailored the game was they it's all mission based now, which I guess is because that kind of compartmentalized game works better on a portable, on a handheld.
It's probably like also a lot easier to develop, I would imagine.
Maybe, but the missions are all 20 to 30 minutes long, which is not bite-sized by any means, unless you take a shitload of time to chew your food. Like, it's... The missions are long, but what sucks... And let me be clear, because the first game had like these mandatory points where you had to go back to the lab and empty out your vacuum and do all this stuff, but they were not nearly this frequent. But more importantly, it's not the stopping and starting that sucks. It's the fact that the missions themselves are the most like frustrating. They have taken every cue from the book of bad game design. Like, there are so many fetch quests. There are escort missions. There is, towards the end of the game, a instant fail timed mission that is, like, the difficulty spikes 1,000% out of nowhere and, like, made me want to probably stop playing the game and tell Arthur, like, I just wasn't going to review it. Like, it gets really hairy. Not only that, but, like, it's so fucking repetitive. Every chapter, if you will, takes place in a different level, and there are 5 or 6 or 4 different missions inside that level. In each one of those chapters, there will be a point where you have to find, like, a crank or a key or these parts of a windmill to open up the door to the next area. You will find it in the very next mission. Ghost will fucking steal it. Ghost will fucking steal it, and then you have to go back and get that thing again. That happens literally in every chapter. And by the sixth chapter, like, you get a key, and you're like, well, bye, friend. Like, it was fun having you, but I know a ghost or a dog, or I'll drop you in a grate, or, like, something is going to happen where I'm just going to have to track it down again.
Yeah, which Luigi is pretty clumsy, I would say.
Yeah, but, and ghosts are dicks, and, like, they'll steal your shit, but fucking put it in your pocket. That's really all you have to do.
But ghosts can just reach through your pocket.
I guess
that's true. That's a fact.
Yeah.
By the way, if Griffin and I are discussing ghosts, TM, again, trademark my brother and me, 2013.
It's a little thing, I guess, because, like, ultimately you're still completing missions and catching ghosts no matter what. But
you just want some. I mean, it's just some reason
some
to be
variation. Yeah. Not only that, the ghosts themselves have, like, no character whatsoever, which is probably the most disheartening part to me.
I just wish that they would go, like, tie into the, like, Nintendo pantheon more.
It's not that. So the first game, like I mentioned, like, you go into the nursery, and there's a baby ghost, and you have to solve the puzzle of the nursery to figure out how to catch the baby ghost, right? And then there's the mom ghost, and then there's, like, the, you know, whatever, the grandpa ghost. There are these different ghost characters, and what they are and what their setting is, like, informs what you have to do to solve their puzzle to catch them. In this, the bosses are, like, identical. They are these poltergeists that take over these different menacing objects that you then have to defeat. And, like, the bosses are all different. So let me be clear. Like, the boss fights are all different. Some of them are, like, legit puzzles. Some of them are just, like, pattern recognition and then figuring out how to beat them. But there's not that sense of, like, it's not as engrossing. It's not like, okay, I'm in a ballroom. Like, there are these two dancer ghosts I have to catch. What do I do with that? Which, I guess, like, it doesn't sound like a little thing. It just, like, takes away from a lot of the charm
and the atmosphere. You're just thinking a lot less. It's more you're just reacting.
It's like, the first game was this. It was a lot more puzzle driven, and in this game it's much more action driven. And though they have fixed it in every conceivable way, they, like, didn't pay attention to what was so great about the first game, which was how atmospheric it was and how memorable it was. Like,
yeah.
And I think that the biggest shame is, regardless of how, you know, competent the multiplayer is and how it's been tailored for this multiplayer platform and how great the action is, I don't think when the game was announced at whatever E3 or Gamescom last year, I don't think when the game was announced, people got excited because they were like, oh, well, maybe they'll fix the ghost combat this time around. You know what I mean? They got excited because, like, the first game was this really charming, not terrible side story in the Mario universe that had, like, just so much character.
Yeah,
and I think that a lot of that is lost here.
Maybe because they didn't have to adapt it to English this time.
Do you think? What do you mean?
What?
Well, the first game was developed in Japan, right?
Right.
And it was probably sent through Treehouse, and Treehouse does all sorts of weird storytelling things.
This Are game you sure was about that? Because this Canada. Was Treehouse doing that back in, you know, 2000? And...
Well, not only that,
Treehouse has been doing that since the GB.
I don't think it's even relevant because, like, it's not like the game. I don't think localization would have changed. Certainly not how the game plays.
Treehouse.
They do localization. They do the dialogue and all that stuff. The story.
I will say, exactly. Like, there's some of that. There's some of that stuff. Like, the boos all have the word boo in their name somehow, and they all have, like, the best boo puns, like, ever. Like, some of that shines through, but, like, it really isn't an issue of localization because, like, there are no ghost characters to write.
You're saying the ghosts don't have enough soul, right?
That's really good.
Like, shoes,
I feel like I'm splitting hairs, and, like, I feel like this is a kind of criticism that people fucking hate because I'm actually saying that they fixed a lot of things about the game while, like, I didn't get as sentimental. It's not that it could be better, it's that
They didn't give you that Nintendo feeling.
Right. Like, right. I don't know, a little
squeeze on your heart.
It's not as memorable as the first GameCube game was, which, like, won't mean a lot of things. Like, it won't mean much to people, but I feel like that's what set the original Luigi's Mansion apart, and that people are going to, like, if you were a fan of Luigi's Mansion, I feel like, I don't know, you're gonna miss that charm, for lack of a better word.
Does it have any Waluigi?
No.
I can't with the spoilers.
God, why would I play this game?
It does have a dog that's a ghost. That will revive you if you find a golden bone, which you have to sometimes, because some of the missions are so fucking hard, you guys.
Yeah, I've got a golden bone right here.
All right, can we end the show? I don't want to hear anybody on this talk anymore.
Yep.
Okay, so here's the deal. Chris Plant and I, well, Justin and Griffin are heading up to PAX East this weekend.
Yeah, if you're there and on, come on, say hi. Saturday at 12:30, Sunday at 12:30, Arachnid. I'll be there discussing games journalism in the first one, Snore. And then I'll be hanging out with Gamers with Jobs on Sunday, talking about why we game even though we're old men. 12:30, Arachnid.
Yeah.
If you're in Arachnid and it's 12:30 and I'm not there, it's Friday.
Whereas
and this podcast is not
popular. That's a shit way to tell time, by the way.
It's like you gotta come up with something better than that.
Chris Plant and I will be at GDC all next week.
Bioshock's out next week, but I don't think we're gonna talk about it next week, because we're gonna save it. Get deep in it. So that's next week, and by that I mean we don't know, but it'll be
we'll figure it out
what you've come to expect.
Yeah, so make sure to join us again then on Friday for the besties. Because shouldn't the world's best friends play the world's best game?